Up next, listen to the future of the internet with WebTalk and hear the latest news and trends keeping those electronic circuits and broadband connections buzzing.
This week on WebTalk Radio, Mitch Radcliffe from Red Herring's The Now joins us. We're going to talk all about bloggers as journalists, the possibility of a G browser, MSN Radio, RSS readers, and a visit from a researcher from Pew Internet and American Life talking about the popularity of instant messaging.
Stay connected. WebTalk is coming up next.
WebTalk Radio is brought to you by Web.com, the most trusted name on the net. When you're ready to get on the web, visit Web.com for domain names as low as $4.95. Web.com offers full-featured web hosting, including online store packages, starting at only $7.95 per month. Web.com has thousands of .web.com names available at www.web.com.
You're connected to WebTalk at WebTalkRadio.com for the week of September 25th, 2004, and my name is Rob Greenlee, and thank you for checking us out from all points on the globe. Dana and myself have some terrific guests that keep you plugged into some of the latest net trends and some of the coolest internet-connected devices and software.
You said my name. And I'll say it again. I'm Dana Greenlee. I am also here with Rob to bring you lots of information on the web and just give you my little geek girl viewpoint.
That's right. And we do actually have a new website, so go check it out at webtalkradio.com. We've got a lot of cool functionality there, a blog, and which we're going to talk a lot about today. But we're also joined in the studio by Mitch Radcliffe, who is our famous technology pundit and past co-host of the show. And he writes a daily blog for the Red Herring website, and it's called The Now. And it's at redherring.com. Mitch, welcome to the show again.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here with you and Dana.
Well,
you know, I was just thinking a moment ago.
You were
James
actually thinking.
Spader.
You were thinking about James Spader.
Okay. I was thinking about
what,
James Spader.
What brought this on?
Well, you know, the thing is, I don't know whether the folks out in radio and streaming land know it, but jamesspader.org is actually created and hosted by our own mutant web girl.
Yes, indeed. And I told him if he'd say jamesspader.org, I'd give him some money.
It's a really a fabulous site.
Dana, you know, is lining his pockets here. So
I will just say that actually that site saw so much traffic after Sunday night because, as you well know, James Spader won Best Lead Male in a Drama.
I think the entire nation stopped for a moment of silence to recognize that fact. Because James Spader rocks.
James Spader indeed rocks.
Apparently, because you created a website all about him. But, you know, the fact that your website saw all that traffic is a very interesting piece of evidence about the rise of this conversational market where one person can make a huge impact on people's perception just by putting a site out there that's there at the right time when people care about
well,
something.
Well, that's exactly right. She came up to the top of Google for, was it James Spader Emmy. Or something
yeah,
something
I was
like
number one. My little old fan site.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? I mean, that's the power of the press, and everyone has it now. And you bet me $5 I couldn't get jamesspader.org into this show with any relevance.
There's lots of relevance because it's all about the web. You know, she's streaming really high bitrate videos.
$5.
Okay, but you
It was just worth doing for the thrill of doing it.
You might want to talk to the Red Herring blokes and see if they'll let you talk
sponsor
about
James?
Blog James Spader a bit. You can blog about him.
No. We're already going to talk about a company I have an investment in this show, so let's just stop it there.
Okay.
Well, we have a lot of good things to cover this week, and some of them are.
Also wanted to mention, also, Dan and I became bloggers this week, Mitch.
I remember when you became parents. And I see the glow of possibility in your eyes about the blog that I saw about your own children.
Oh, you did.
And, you know, I just want to. I just want to stop. You know, it's a beautiful thing when a blog is born.
Yes, it is.
Like jamesspader.org. That's a beautiful thing too, man. Oh God, I'm having a flashback.
I told you the LSD kicks in about the time you're having your second amaretto.
I am not drinking on the air.
So is it?
I feel like you know. Now I feel like Dean Martin.
Hey, cutie.
And what he means by that, kids, is
he's had one too many drinks here. No.
Well, Rob, can we tell everybody what to expect on the show besides some more off-the-wall
drinking
comments?
Drinking amaretto. It sounds so gay.
Well,
hey, did you hear about Fagoogle? It's Fag Google.
Oh.
It's apparently a thing going around. I was just on a phone call, a conference call, a business conference call, and the person I was talking to said, did you hear about Fag Google, the gay search engine?
The gay search engine.
Is this serious?
I'm sure they're going to get sued by Google for trademark infringement.
I bet if you type jamesspader.org into Fag Google, you'd probably get a number of hits.
Friends, I'm going broke now. Well, speaking of Google, is there a browser coming for them? I can't believe this.
It could very well be. What else is up their sleeve? You never know.
And Audible.com is going wireless.
And RSS reader software maker NewsGator gets a new CEO and possibly a new name.
MSN Radio clones local stations in the Windows Media Player 10.
I'm going to be on the air with Sammy and Frankie, and we're going to do some songs.
Once we take the amaretto away from Mitch, later in the show we'll talk.
Amaretto. Good God.
With the Pew Internet.
Why isn't it scotch, for Christ's sake?
Later in the show, the Pew Internet Report will be the topic of our conversation. They came out with an instant messaging adoption report that says 53 million American adult internet users use IM. 24% of them use it more than email. I think I can understand that. We'll be joined by Amanda Lenhart. She's research specialist from Pew Internet and American Life Project.
For instant messenger users who prefer IM to email, they are by far in what we call the Generation Y group, which you would probably expect. It's 18 to 27-year-olds. And they told us that they liked it because it felt like more like a conversation instead of a letter, the way email feels to them. And also, we suspect that there's some spam issues going on, that people are moving over to instant messaging because they don't have to deal with as much spam there.
Oh, and also, Mitch is going to stay with us through most of the show this week, and he's going to go into greater detail later in the show about the future of RSS and some of its problems and opportunities. And we're also going to talk about the changes that are being made to major media by the blogosphere out there. And,
oh, yeah, I love the ladies and the RSS.
Yes, and the bloggers are having an impact on the U.S. politics and really...
There's not enough ice in my drink, damn it.
...causing a lot of problems for a lot of the old media out there.
It's time to get into that news this week. Wow, Gmail, and now we have GBrowser?
GBrowser actually has been registered by Google. Actually, that's been confirmed. And Google's also been hiring some developers from Microsoft that worked on the IE browser. So there's not a confirmed thing. Google is not confirming this as a development thing, but there's a lot of people speculating because it makes a lot of sense that that they could be coming out with this because they've got a lot of tools that need to be aggregated, and this would be a great way to aggregate Gmail. And also there's talk about GIM coming, which is the Google Instant Messenger tool.
GIM.
And what do you think,
Mitch?
But
why not just strip it down and make it into a series of web services you plug into applications rather than ship an application to deliver it? That's what I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think that all these services should be plug and play in all the applications you currently use, from Outlook and IE. Not that I actually use those things, but or into Word or whatever. I mean, if I were going to build something today, I would not build an application and ship it out there. I would put it out as an API that anybody could call from a system or from an application, and then you could do some really cool things in terms of searching the documents that you were calling from.
That would keep the litigation down, too. You know.
Probably keep the litigation down.
They're probably doing that as well,
really,
Mitch.
Really a key to keeping the litigation down?
What's that?
JamesSpader.org. Because, of course, you know James Spader plays a lawyer on the soon-to-be-launched Boston Legal, which I understand that a certain Dana Greenlee operates a site about at boston-legal.org. Now you owe me $25. James Spader, he's just so dreamy.
I understand that you actually ran into him.
I did.
Okay.
Ran right over him with my car. Because he had that scary James Spader face on.
We got a movie that actually showed James Spader getting killed.
Actually
shot dead in the middle of a rainstorm.
Yes, we do. Yeah. And you can find that video clip at jamesspader.org.
You can.
Well, we were talking about whether or not Google should jump into the fray and put out an OS. Are we done with that one?
Well, I think what they ought to do is probably put little images of James Spader all over the browser.
Mine already has that. Thank you.
And what in heck are they going to do with Orkut that's the other piece here. Is this kind of hanging out there?
An experiment. Orca is an experiment to get people to tell them as much as they possibly can
about themselves. That's
so
right.
So you can place advertising wherever they go. Cool. Now, if you know that already and you have a browser, you can control the interface. And say, you know, I mean, if for instance you're really into an actor, like say for instance
James Spader.
Yes.
I don't know how I guess that.
Or maybe you hang out at jamesspader.org all the time.
I run the James Spader community at Orkut, just to let you know.
Okay. Well, there you go. So now your ads
are always
going to be Boston Legal ads. And, you know, they'll probably also have Travelocity or whatever, that Priceline. Because William Shatner, who is on Boston Legal, as I have been instructed this afternoon, he's all about Priceline.
I think you're right. And I think – now that I know it, I will have to make sure I control my interface. We're going to have to stop talking about the Spader long enough, though, to take a quick break. We'll be back with more with Mitch and Rob and Dana in a moment. You're listening to Web Talk Radio.
Another day, come on.
Hi, this is Rob Greenlee of Web Talk Radio. I've got a tip for you. If you're looking to register a new domain name or get a new website hosted, then support the Web Talk Radio show by visiting web.com. They have been a trusted name on the web for years and have had over 300,000 customers over the years. They specialize in domain name registrations and hosting, but they have a domain name registration as low as $4.95 per year, and that's for a yourname.web.com domain name. And they also have regular .com domain names for $6.95 per year. Web.com was recently ranked number one by tophost.com and CNET certified as being a top web hosting provider. Their hosting plans are as low as $7.95 per month, and that's even for an online e-commerce solution. So trust me, Web.com is a great place to get your solution, and you can give them a call at 1-800-761-2468. That's 1-800-761-2468, or just visit them right on their website at web.com.
Yeah, man, I'll tell you what, that dang old internet, man. You just go on there and point and click, get in there, talk about www.com. You got them naked chicks on there, man. You go click, 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 click. It's real easy, man.
Don't you know who we are?
You webheads rock!
Gather around, webheads. Listen and learn.
They've done it to me, and you know what? They're gonna do it to you.
Oh, yeah!
I'm Rob Greenlee, and this is Web Talk Radio at webtalkradio.com. Dana Greenlee is in here with me, too.
And here in the Ladvox studio with us, and how could you forget, it's Mitch Radcliffe. Mitch is the blogger at Red Herrings The Now, and he's a sought-after technology pundit with not just a little bit on his mind.
Well, and part of the reason why this whole James Spader thing is coming up is because for all our listeners that are outside of the United States, he just won an Emmy for Best Dramatic Actor.
You know, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but enough of the Spader. Let's get into some.
Really? You're sick of it?
Let's talk about Audible and wireless.
Okay.
But let's also keep in mind this is a conflict of interest for me.
Okay. Well,
I do have an investment in Audible, and I work with them frequently.
Okay.
And they haven't been wireless.
We would like to work with them too, Mitch. So
they haven't been wireless just in the last week. They've been doing a thing with AT&T wireless for a number of years, but this is a very cool thing that they're doing now.
Well, and what's they've done a deal with Sprint PCS wireless, and what this really means is that the Audible content is going to be available to a Windows mobile smartphone, the Samsung SPI-600 phone, to get started with here. And I think what this is a real sign of things that are going to come here more. And we've talked about a lot on the show is how content is going to become more mobile and audio content. And I know, Mitch, you have this strong opinion about phones being used as a audio device, not a TV, that the best use for a phone is audio. So I think this deal that Audible's doing is just another sign of the consumption of audio moving towards the mobile phone platform.
Yes, however, I think that the phone is ill-named. I mean, would you really want something from Microsoft, SPI, Spy 600?
No.
In your pocket.
That's unfortunate.
Oh, I got
true.
A spy in my pocket.
Well, you know, Big Brother's looking in on this one too, right?
No, I think it's really it's a a good idea to deliver a lot of content to the phone. And so you can listen to it because, of course, you listen to your phone already.
Yeah, it's
a
perfect
habit
match.
We've already adapted to.
Well, and it's what we're trying to do with WebTalk. We're trying to get our show distributed to as many mobile phone type platforms as we can as well, because that's, like you keep saying, that's what people do, is they listen when they're on a phone.
You know, what you really need is a high-powered CEO.
Yes, that's...
You know who would be a good high-powered CEO?
The one that NewsGator just hired?
Or James Spader.
James Spader, he would be a terrific CEO.
You're right.
Famous CEO. He would actually probably be able to help a company raise a lot of venture capital very quickly, I would think.
I would think so.
Yeah.
And Dana could get a pass.
Rob still doesn't know what this means. Well, you were talking about RSS. What's up with that?
Well, we're just talking about one of the most popular newsreaders out there. And what I'm talking about is an RSS newsreader. And a lot of blog sites are putting up little XML links that enable a person to subscribe and get to the posts on a really easy, convenient basis within the RSS readers out there. And this particular one, NewsGator, is making their feeds available through the Outlook email application for Microsoft. And they've just hired a new CEO, which is kind of interesting because the CEO is from ZDNet, which is a content company.
Ziff Davis, the publishing company.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So he's got a strong background in content.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a technology company, right, that's trying to put out newsreaders. So what I'm thinking is this is a terrific sign that RSS is kind of moving towards content delivery.
Absolutely. I think you shouldn't think of RSS as just a if you're starting a company as a technology, you should think of it as a composing a page.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they're doing now is beginning to compose a completely personalized view of content. And so this makes a lot of sense. I think that they will do quite well if they execute on getting people to commit to allowing their content into these spaces on an exclusive basis. And mm-hmm. so, because what happened, you know, the problem is you've got this supply and demand thing. If you can just go anywhere and get anything, nobody ever really, you know, corners the market on something value that everybody wants and can't get unless they do business with you.
Mm-hmm.
So there's going to be an interesting movement afoot to kind of create choke points in RSS. And I don't know whether that'll work or not, but if it does, it'll be a very interesting business. And then, of course, Microsoft will buy NewsGator because it's built into Outlook.
Yeah, well, that's what I was wondering. But Microsoft could easily build this for themselves. It's not a really complex application or anything. Why would they just buy it? Is it just to aggregate the content?
I mean, and to get the existing users.
Yeah,
that's basically what they'd be buying, is the users.
But, you know, the thing is, if Microsoft can't buy the existing users, why not just clone the source? Which brings us to the next story.
Good segue there. I know.
But you know what would really make this cool?
What's that?
If James Spader came through the door right now.
That would really make Dana's day, that's for sure.
Well, it's interesting about...
I was also going to mention that NewsGator's looking to change their name, too.
Is it?
And I wonder why.
Well, there's a little contest, too. If you kind of come up with a good name, you'll get a Windows Media Center PC?
Windows Media Media Center.
Media Center.
A full Media Center PC. And the reason that they're wanting to change their name is because NewsGator is
very similar
to another company that got a bad rap online.
A spyware company.
Spyware program, or actually adware company.
What was that?
Gator.
Oh, right.
Actually, it is spyware because it would drop stuff in that would say, what are you doing? I'm going to pop up an ad.
Well, it was also an adware, too.
Those pieces of shit.
It was. No question. So they're actually changing. Actually, I asked the CEO of this company down at Supernova whether or not he saw Gator as a liability in his name, and he agreed. So this is an interesting...
You know, maybe you're the one who started this whole thing.
Maybe you created a sense
of anxiety.
I'm sure I wasn't the only one that thought of this, Mitch.
No, I'm pretty sure you were.
Okay.
You.
It was my fault.
You and James Spader.
James is not exactly a technologist, so I'll just put it that way. So,
well, Microsoft.
James can be anything. He's an actor.
That's true. Mm-hmm. That's true.
listen to Dana's. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Maybe he can be anything.
Yeah, baby.
I understand that Microsoft is treading very trepidatiously on some, I don't know, probably some plagiaristic use of radio station.
Well, they're
names.
Cloning radios, local radio stations within their Windows Media Player 10.
I think a more appropriate description would be ripping
off
the names of radio stations.
Okay, well, explain the situation so people understand.
They've created, you know, their whole music site, their MSN Music, which also has an area in there just like iTunes has, where you can link to live radio streams. And what they've done is they've taken all the major radio stations from every major market in the U.S. and created a playlist live stream that duplicates the content within that particular radio station in each of the markets. So like in the Seattle-Tacoma market, there's like, let's say, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, about 8 or 9 radio stations that they've cloned where they're actually using the station identification, you know, the call letters and the station number, the station frequency, in the name of the stream here within the Windows Media Player 10.
And saying, this is the program. But yeah, without all the stuff that the radio station plays.
Yeah, and it has nothing to do with the radio station.
No official agreement.
Think it sounds like a good way to get sued.
What are they thinking?
You know why they would probably want to get sued?
Why?
Because then they could hire James Spader, star of Boston Legal.
To defend them. You know, he is a civil litigator, so this might work out.
There you go.
So go check it out. If you don't want to listen to your local station, just go to Microsoft's Windows Media Player, and you can listen to all your favorite stations in each of your local markets.
Web Talk Radio every week is sponsored by our friends over at web.com. They're not only the most trusted name on the net, but boy, do they have a good domain name. Go to web.com. You can get domain names for as low as $4.95 a year. Not bad. Actually, $7.95 a month will buy you even an e-commerce hosted website. So this is something to look at. Check out web.com.
And we're also supported by InfoCreek.com, who built our new website at WebTalkRadio.com, and they are a low-cost web design firm out of the Ukraine. So they're actually the only worldwide web development firm that I'm aware of that works 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So go check them out at InfoCreek.com. Stay with us, because up next, Mitch, Dane, and I are going to discuss blogging journalism and whether or not it's the only truth left out there in journalism. You don't want to miss it. This is Web Talk Radio. Hi, this is Rob Greenlee of Web Talk Radio. I've got a tip for you. If you're looking to register a new domain name or get a new website hosted, then support the Web Talk Radio show by visiting web.com. They have been a trusted name on the web for years and have had over 300,000 customers over the years. They specialize in domain name registrations and hosting, but they have a domain name registration as low as $4.95 per year, and that's for a yourname.web.com domain name. And they also have regular .com domain names for $6.95 per year. Web.com was recently ranked number one by tophost.com and CNET certified as being a top web hosting provider. Their hosting plans are as low as $7.95 per month, and that's even for an online e-commerce solution. So trust me, web.com is a great place to get your solution, and you can give them a call at 1-800-761-2468. That's 1-800-761-2468, or just visit them right on their website at web.com. You're back and listening to Web Talk at WebTalkRadio.com. And my name is Rob Greenlee, and joined by Dana Greenlee, and Mitch Radcliffe is still with us in here.
Mitch is our longtime professional blogger guy that's right now he's blogging at Red Herring, doing The Now. He's been a blogger at ZDNet, on 24 as a chief content officer. And of course, you can find him at RadcliffeBlog.com and Correspondences.org. He's very prolific. Hey, Mitch, why don't you just explain to everybody what it is you actually do besides talk about James Spader.
Do. I write a lot. And what blogging is the arrangement of words into syntactically correct sentences.
Is it?
Organized on a page in a reverse chronological order based on the time of posting.
You don't actually write anything on a page. It's all on the computer screen, right?
Yeah, you know, that's a really interesting idea, this whole idea of a page.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when you think about it, a page
is a piece of paper. But
what the hell is a computer screen?
It's not a
piece
of paper.
You know what this is? It's like when you
realize not a page.
That you could be just one atom on, you know, Earth could be an atom spinning in the fingernail of a giant.
You could be.
You know, a giant James Spader, for instance.
Now, what's the going rate these days for bloggers? I mean,
you really don't want to know how shitty it is.
Okay. Because they pay you by the word.
No, they do not pay me by the word.
They pay you by the blog?
They don't pay me by the blog.
Do you blog for free?
Not quite.
Okay.
Well, most of the time, probably.
But I have to say, most of my own blogging, obviously, yeah. I don't pay myself, although sometimes I write a check just to get the thrill.
But do you try and cash it?
But I can't say that there are a lot of people making a lot of money blogging where they're getting paid by some organization to do it. It may be something that is a secondary function, like to being a reporter or an editor, that they, you know, and then they do that. But not many people actually get paid any real money. And certainly what I'm getting paid is not, you know, an outstanding rate for a freelancer. But there are benefits to doing it. I mean, you know, being associated with a brand like the Red Herring is a darn fine thing. And I'm grateful to, and you know, to give me the space and the editorial freedom to, you know, shoot my mouth off.
You've been a writer for years and years and years. So mm-hmm. How wonderful that you can write and still be, what do you call them? The pajama bloggers?
Yeah, well, that's what
pajama journalists.
Oh yes, thank you.
That's what the major old media is referring to the bloggers out there, because they're encroaching in their old media space. You see, so
it's jealousy.
They have to kind of have a negative connotation.
It's kind of like the old media is the United States, and the bloggers are Cat Stevens on an airplane. And what they're trying to do is reroute us to Bangor, Maine, so they can take us off the plane before we get to Washington, D.C. and take over.
Can you believe it? Now, you actually blogged about Cat Stevens.
I did.
Didn't?
I blogged about Cat Stevens and the fact that I really think that that kind of, you know, culture of fear is terrible for American business.
Why don't you explain to all the listeners that maybe not know about the Cat Stevens event?
Well, Cat Stevens, currently known as Yusuf Islam, a convert to Islam in the 1970s, was flying to the United States on a transatlantic flight. And apparently, even though he'd been here a few months ago, the U.S. government realized that Mr. Islam was on the plane and rerouted the plane to Bangor, Maine in order to take him off. Because I guess if Cat Stevens, you know, author of Peace Train and Moon Shadow,
was such a threat,
got to Washington, D.C., something bad was going to happen. So
you never know, though, right?
But, you know, the thing is, the old media is kind of like that. They're finding every possible way to accuse bloggers of doing something either less professional or less accurate. And, you know, with the Rathergate thing going on, who should, you know, who's to talk? But at the same time, being a longtime journalist, you know, there are always errors. Every day, if you turn to page it's page 2 in the New York Times, or to page 3 in the Wall Street Journal, you will see a column of corrections. The fact that mistakes are made is not the problem. The fact that people defend their mistakes is the problem. There are certain presidents who could take a lesson or two from that.
Really?
Well, and also, why aren't those mistakes put back on the front page? If the mistakes were made on the front page, why aren't they put back on the front page?
Well, now that's what's happening, is the bloggers are the front page where the corrections are being made.
But
and so no, they are. They're making the corrections, and they're giving it the same kind of play.
Yeah.
And that's what is elevating this. So you get journalistic commentators who say, I don't understand why the Rather thing is so big, you know, such a big deal, because corrections are just a standard thing. Like I just did, except the bloggers are the guys who say, you know what? It is front page news that you guys screwed up.
Yeah.
And so that's a change in the media environment.
Well, and is Dan Rather going to lose his job over this DocuGate?
I don't know. He's an old guy.
Docudrama,
anyway.
Whatever they were referring to.
He should have retired about 5 years ago.
Yeah. But he certainly created a stink, and he's actually given a bad name, I think, to the old media a little bit here.
I think the old media takes care of itself just fine. Dan Rather didn't need to do it.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, how much have we ignored, you know, in terms of coverage? There's actually a great Audible book. We were talking about Audible before. It's Jon Stewart's America, the host of The Daily Show.
Daily Show,
audio book, which is very funny. It's not entirely funny. It's kind of a mixed bag.
Love him.
But he does this whole rant about the press and the fact that, you know, why do they claim that it's reasonable to say the story today is, did the president convince America we needed to go to war, instead of what were the facts about what the president told us, which is what the function of the press is. The press is already screwed up royally.
Yeah.
Dan Rather didn't do anything that would have, you know, embarrassed it anymore if we were just stop and pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, even bloggers use things for partisan purposes. And so they'll point to what they feel is advantageous to their arguments, but not necessarily question their arguments by pointing to counter arguments.
So is the media just playing into what the viewers want to see, though? That I think if you
is.
Kind of
everyone is because everyone bloggers. I mean, you know, look, I blog, and I love people who blog, but they ought to admit that they have an opinion and they're sawing their own horse, you know, mm-hmm. when they do it.
Everybody's not fair and balanced, right?
No one is fair and balanced. Everybody has an opinion, and so actually, I think blogging is a darn fine thing because it's dragging media back to a world where you can say, you know, I actually know what this person stands for.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a bad thing.
Yeah, because, I mean, has Dan Rather and these old media been biased all these years and we just didn't know that they were biased? I think that's one of the questions that's been raising in my mind over this whole scheme
you
here.
You obviously haven't been watching Fox. They've been trying to prove that for years.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's blatant there.
You know, and Fox is just as much so, and yet mm-hmm. they claim to be fair and balanced.
Yeah.
It's all just a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah, it is. It is. And seems like bloggers are really the only place that's holding the media accountable, though. I mean, if you aggregate all these opinions.
Ombudsmen at certain media outlets, which try to. But, you know, they're also in the business of, you know, trying to make their company a better place.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I agree. But I think that we need to be more critical of ourselves as bloggers, too. We shouldn't get on a high horse about this. And I do tend to, you know, I believe that many bloggers tend to forget that they themselves are engaged in acts of partisanship without acknowledging it. And so it's a mixed bag. It's a double-edged sword. It cuts both ways.
But most people out there don't really even know how to use a blog or how to even get the blogs out there. So
we're
still talking about a minority. We're still talking about a minority of people that are reading blogs posting blogs.
Well, I don't know about reading blogs. I think there are a lot of people who are reading blogs who may not even think of them as blogs but as websites.
Yeah.
But the thing is, there's never been a situation in American history or in any country's history where you had 5 or 6 million people publishing a daily newspaper.
Uh-huh.
That's and
true.
That's an astonishing thing. And that's a wonderfully democratic event.
Yeah.
Can you name, five blogs?
No, I don't read blogs.
You know, he just reads his RSS reader. That's what.
Yeah,
that's
I just
all
read my
at.
Own postage and really just go, "Oh God, I rock." No, I you know, I read Doc Searls. I read the Daily Kos.
Can you give domains there?
No.
Okay.
they're all in my RSS reader. I don't think about what the domains are. I read Robert Scoble to figure out what's going on at Microsoft. I read.
Do you actually visit a website, though, anymore?
No. Very seldom. I read
that's a fundamental
Joey Ito.
Thing.
I go to Joey Ito's website because I like what he's done with the design of the page, and I'm usually looking at what he's done with the design as much as what he's writing about that day.
See, that's a sign of I think, an even bigger fundamental change that's happening with the internet and the web is the fact that people are exchanging information outside of a browser now more than ever.
Yeah, but, you know, and we've talked about this on the show before, I think that RSS is going to grow up and become a compositional tool. I mean, right now, if you get an RSS story and you get another one
just
a minute later,
text.
The last one you got is still the last one you got, right?
Yeah.
And if the first story was a really important story, you know, war declared in Iraq, and the next story is Britney Spears gets married. Which is actually a problem that we have in the mainstream media, too, because they go from one of those stories to the other without making any distinction between which one's important.
So we're supposed to care about Britney Spears getting married. Yeah.
But the thing is, RSS, when you start having the ability to rank what's important, or if you could immediately see what everybody else was paying attention to and have that bounce the RSS.
Kind of like an Amazon.com movers and shakers.
Then you'd have a way for people to start to tell one another what they're paying attention to. And we're very close to that happening. There are a number of people working on that.
Well, one example of that just from this past week was this whole G browser rumor that was actually, I think, sparked in the blogs.
Yeah, it was.
And that actually sparked articles that were written in media. Because of the conversation in the blogs, because somebody leaked it or somebody went and looked at,
I'll guarantee you that Google manipulated that news this way. They said, let's figure out whether or not we should do a browser. How would we do that? Well, let's register the domain name and see what happens. And so now they've got market research and the commentary of hundreds of people, experts, supposedly writing about it.
Do you really think that they were that crafty about it? Do you think that they really did it?
Yeah, I think that if you want to figure out how to make it, whether or not somebody's interested in something and you're in a market position like Google is to react quickly, because Google believes that they can do anything with a few coders in a few days, I think that you would do that.
But is it more likely this was just
it's
an
not evil
accident?
To do that. No, it wasn't an accident.
You don't think it was an accident?
No.
What about their
it wasn't an, it may not have been a decision that the CEO of Google made. It may have been a decision by one guy at Google, but he probably did it with the idea, you know, let's register it and see whether or not anybody says anything.
Well, who actually sparked the rumor, do you know?
I don't. I mean, I was on Joey Ito's IRC channel last night, and somebody was claiming they'd given a talk about the importance of the browser at Google, and maybe they had started it. So, you know,
yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah, I'd heard like small pieces of this from various people over the last, last week or so, about the fact that Google has been hiring away developers from the IE development team. But I didn't put the pieces together at the time that maybe they were developing a browser. I just thought they were getting coders.
Well, they might not be developing a browser. There are other explanations. I mean, you might want to understand how IE works, mm-hmm. Under the hood, if you wanted to do interesting things to plug web services into it.
Well,
and I think anybody who's building an application is, that's a very questionable business to, go out and try to, capture more of the browser market. We already know about the incompatibilities in browsers that screw up, the viewing of pages between different operating systems and things like that.
Well, about 2 weeks ago, we had on the president of the Mozilla Foundation, mm-hmm. and they actually have the code base that's being rumored as being the code base for this browser, and all Google's doing is putting a skin on it that is adding some functionality, and that's where these developers are coming in.
Okay, but then they are going to add other technological hooks that people are going to be able to grab hold of in that environment, and those are the things that will break something.
Yeah.
And that's the essence of competitive capitalist companies going into these businesses. They have to create defensible positions. And so something in there is going to break something. I don't know what it's going to be, and I wouldn't venture to guess. Mm-hmm. But there's going to be a situation where, Google tries to shut out Microsoft or whatever.
Yeah. Well, Mitch, thanks for joining us on the show. It's great
always
to have you on again.
A pleasure to be here. And, I just want to say one more time, James Spader, baby.
Go visit jamesspader.org and make Dana real happy.
Pretty soon we'll see if we can twist Mitch's arm to blog on spader.org.
You know, to actually be a guest blogger on spader.org?
Yes, we might be able to pay you.
Ooh.
Well, Mitch, you could be a guest blogger at webtalkradio.com,
I can be a guest blogger anywhere that you ask me to.
Wow. Thank you. That's a lot of power you've given me, Mitch.
There you go.
Do you use instant messaging, or are you thinking that maybe you should start using instant messaging before you get left behind? Got to stay connected, because we'll be talking about IM with Pew Internet and American Life researcher Amanda Linhart. You're listening to Web Talk Radio. You're back with Web Talk Radio at webtalkradio.com, and go check out our new website. My name is Rob Greenlee, and Dana Greenlee's in here with me as well. Thanks, Rob. Well, a new survey from the Pew and Internet American Life Project finds that some 42% of online Americans use instant messaging. That's called IM to the rest of the world. And it's especially popular with younger adults, what they call Generation Y demographic, and also technology enthusiasts.
We're joined by Amanda Linhart, who is a research specialist for Pew Internet and American Life Project. And she took a few minutes out of her day to share some of their research highlights of the study. Amanda, thanks for calling into the show.
Oh, thanks, Rob.
Why don't you tell us about your study on instant messaging? It's really amazing, some of the facts that you had in this study. About 53 million Americans using IM. It's amazing. Why don't you run through some of the highlights of the study for us?
Well, certainly. Well, you just hit a big one there, that about 42% of online Americans are using instant messaging. And what we also found that was pretty fascinating is about 29% of that group is using it every day. So it's something that people are incorporating into their daily lives. Another group of people also, which I, a number I think is quite fascinating, is the quarter of instant messaging users who say that they IM more than they email.
I know, that's an amazing little stat there. And so is that number growing? Is that getting larger and larger as far as what you guys are seeing?
Well, we don't necessarily have a data over time on that piece of data point, but we have seen that for instant messenger users who prefer IM to email, they are by far in what we call the Generation Y group, which you would probably expect. It's the 18 to 27-year-olds. They are by far the most enthusiastic users of IM in a whole variety of ways, but they are the ones who say that they use IM more than email. In fact, 42% of all instant messengers in that group say that they use IM more than email.
So twice as many as just the general group that you surveyed. Now, do they give you, are they able to respond with reasons why they prefer that to email?
Well, we didn't ask it specifically in this survey, but we have done some recent research actually with a cohort that's right adjacent to this one, some teenagers, some young people who also told us in these groups the same thing, that, oh yeah, I totally use IM more than I use email. And they told us that they liked it because it felt like more like a conversation instead of a letter, the way email feels to them. And also we suspect that there's some spam issues going on, that people are moving over to instant messaging because they don't have to deal with as much spam there.
Yeah, that certainly makes a lot of sense. You know, what the other thing that's interesting about that is that it may be giving us a glimpse into how important instant message is going to be in the future as this generation grows up.
Well, absolutely. I mean, this particular generation, the young adults, 18 to 27, they're the ones who really started using instant messaging as teenagers. It's been around for about 8 years, and they're the ones that kind of cut their teeth on the technology and really first started using it intensively, and they're bringing it along with them into the workplace.
Yeah.
Now, as you probably are putting out there, that it's the teenagers using it, and that's more for a social interaction and stuff, but it's interesting how IM has invaded the workplace. Do you want to share some information on that?
Absolutely. Our study did ask about workplace use of instant messaging. It was actually a little bit smaller of a group than we had expected. It was 21% of IM users say they IM at their job. It's about 11 million Americans. So it's nothing to sneeze at. It's a big group of people, but definitely in the context of internet use, it's a relatively smaller group. And we suspect that a lot of that has to do with companies being a little bit nervous about incorporating instant messaging into their workplace. Is it going to be something where my employees are going to be less productive? They're going to gossip. It's going to be a source of insecurity and business leaks. But I think with the advent of more proprietary technology for instant messaging, which allows more security, more record keeping, more sort of oversight over the technology, employers are feeling more comfortable with it, and we'll start to see, I think, more use of it in the workplace.
So there is a way to lock down and make it more secure for companies as far as the clients that are available out there.
Yes, it is. And they're generally clients that, unlike the ones that most people use at home, you have to pay for.
Yeah.
And they're clients that run the instant messages through a secure server that's held in the business's own technological space rather than, for instance, AOL servers or Yahoo servers, which is how other instant messages circulate through the internet.
So did you get a sense for how important actually being able to save those chat conversations are to those companies and how that would affect their adoption of this? Because I know that a lot of companies have to archive emails for documentation reasons. Is that an issue that you see with IM?
I think it is an issue. We were focusing mainly on talking to users about this. And
users
really felt that instant messaging was a positive thing for them in the workplace. They felt that it made them more productive and connected and more balanced workers. It did allow them to talk to other coworkers as well as to family members and kind of allowed them to multitask through their work day. And the question that we asked was, do you think that this is a positive thing, a mixed blessing, but mostly positive, a mixed blessing, but mostly negative, or totally negative? And by far, the largest group of people, almost 70%, say it's a mixed blessing, but mostly positive.
Oh, interesting. That's probably a comment that they would make about any new technology, I would think.
I think that's exactly right.
Yeah. Well, now, it also appears that people that use Instant Messenger are really strong multitaskers. Why don't you talk about that?
Absolutely, which is sort of surprising. I think I had always thought that multitasking was the province of teenagers and young people. But I think we're seeing it sort of, again, work its way into more adult use of this technology. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that while instant messaging feels like a conversation, it really does have much more lag time built into it than an actual conversation like what we're having right now. And so I think what's happening is people are saying, hey, you know, I really am waiting for my sister to answer the question I just asked her on instant messaging. And so I'm going to scoot on over here and type a quick email to my friend, or I'm going to do a piece of research, or I'm going to work on a document. So people are filling in this available time to make themselves more efficient.
Yeah.
Amanda, let's sort of back up and give a bigger view of the type of clients that are out there and the most popular IM clients.
Sure. Well, the most popular IM clients are those put out by AOL. They have two kinds of clients, a proprietary one that's used by their AOL.com users, and then their non-proprietary client, which can be used by anyone. And those two together capture more than 60% of the market, in fact, close to 70% of the market.
Wow, that's amazing.
Then, actually, the next group is Yahoo, and they have about a third of the market. And again, I think people, what's happening here is that people are using multiple clients so that they can talk to different groups of people who might happen to use different different programs. MSN has about a quarter of users, and then ICQ, which also happens to be an AOL-owned program, it has about 6% of the users.
Now, weren't they the leader for the longest
time?
Yeah,
actually, I think
they were.
That
was
first.
Actually the first program. Yeah. It was started by an Israeli company in 1996 and was snapped up by AOL in the late 90s.
Did you guys talk about with your audience or with your survey about how important it is that all these clients communicate with different networks? I know that there was a big battle a couple of years ago between Yahoo, AOL, and Microsoft about being able to give access to each other's networks. Do you see any progress in that area, or did you even cover that?
We didn't ask that in our survey, though actually between when we issued the survey and when we issued the report, there was an announcement by some of the proprietary and non-proprietary IM programs that basically said they would start interoperating. Basically this thing that they had constantly said that they wouldn't do and that the government tried to force them to do, and now they're going to do it on their own. So we should be seeing more interoperation of the different kinds of programs between, I believe, AOL and Yahoo hopefully in the not-too-distant future.
Now, we touched briefly on why maybe they're migrating from IM or from email to IM, and that was because of spam, perhaps. Now, what does your statistic show that if spam or anything like that is entering the IM world?
Well, we don't have concrete statistics on that, but we do have anecdotal reports of what is called SPIM, or spam in instant messaging. And that is something that is obviously affects IM users who have their IM program set up in a certain way to accept all invitations from people, or to have their program notify them when they are asked to instant message with somebody they've never met before or who is not on their buddy list. However, a lot of users are able to set up their programs so that they only receive IMs from people they already know. So there are some defense mechanisms built into the IM programs to protect people from spam. So it hasn't been quite the large problem, obviously, that spam really is. But I think it's growing, and I think as people perhaps migrate away from email, we could see more spam and instant messaging.
Certainly, I think one of the things about the instant messaging clients that are out there is that I think in a lot of ways they're misunderstood by their users. I think there's a thought that these things are just like a chat program that enables just instant conversations, but they don't really realize that the application has a little more advanced capabilities, like you said, being able to almost like send an email to somebody and wait for a response. Is there any feedback that you got from the survey on how people perceive the different uses for the application?
Well, absolutely. We found that in particular younger users, and by that we mean those under 50, really do have a good appreciation of some of the other kinds of tools that IM brings to them, and in particular, away messages. In fact, the youngest users, again, not surprisingly, are the most enthusiastic users of this technology, which basically allows users to post a notice that their entire buddy list can read, that can either say, I've gone somewhere else, I'm not available, or here's my cell phone number, call me this way, or here's my favorite song lyric, or here's a funny joke of the day. But it's some piece of posting. It's a piece of text that they post attached to their buddy, to their username on their buddy list, which allows users to communicate to everybody else. So even when they're not at their computer or at their cellular phone, if you happen to receive instant messages that way, they can still be a part of the buddy list, be a part of the group. And in particular, college students have taken terrific advantage of away messages. It's something that really works for people who are constantly connected either through broadband or big networks. And they really use it to interact with friends and to create this whole sense of like almost like a bulletin board on a dorm room door.
Mm-hmm.
Amanda, we only have about a minute left, but I'd love for you to share with our listeners anything you'd like to about Pew Internet and American Life project at pewinternet.org, what you can offer and do for people that are interested.
Well, we are a nonprofit, nonpartisan research center, and we study the social effects of the Internet on Americans. All of our data and, in fact, all of our reports are available for free on our website, which, as you mentioned, is www.pewinternet.org. I hope people will come and check us out.
That's a great service. And thank you for joining us, Amanda. It's great to speak with you. And
all right. Well, thanks.
We look
thanks
forward
very
to
much.
Having you back on again soon to talk about your next study, I'm sure.
All right. That'd be great.
We're wrapping up another Web Talk show this week. Hope you learned something helpful to make your digital life a little bit better. That's what we strive to do.
Thanks for letting us into your lives, and we'll be back with you for another show next week at webtalkradio.com, and we'll see you around the net.
Thank you for downloading the Web Talk Guys. Bookmark us now for next week. Same Web Talk Guys time, same Web Talk Guys channel.